Welcome to AI and Journalism, the podcast where we empower journalists, communicators, educators, and other media professionals to navigate the world of artificial intelligence with integrity. I'm Yumi Wilson, your host, and in each episode, we'll explore practical ways you can use AI to boost productivity, stay creative, and maintain the ethical standards that our industries demand. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, this is your space to learn how AI can enhance your work without losing your voice. Let's get started. In this episode, we're stepping outside of journalism to explore AI in education, where some of the challenges overlap closely with the media industry. Today's guests, Jose Moreno and Andrew Lawrence, co-founders of New Light, will walk us through how AI supports educators in data management, personalization, and ethical considerations. If you're interested in AI's potential to enhance journalism, especially with ethical efficiency, this episode is for you. Today, we're spotlighting a startup showcase featuring Jose Moreno and Andrew Lawrence. They are tech veterans and folks with a lot of different skill sets here to walk us through the educational technology space, and they're going to talk about their company, New Light. Though education and journalism may seem worlds apart, their approach to ethical and efficient AI offers relevant insights for journalists and other media professionals looking to make AI work for them, not the other way around. Jose and Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So first, I'd love to learn a little bit more about your background. Jose, can you walk us through how you ended up becoming the co-founder of New Light?
Absolutely. First of all, born and raised in LA. Dodgers are in the World Series, so go Dodgers real quick. I went to Harvey Mudd College, which is actually where I met Andrew. We became pretty great friends at that point in time, but did go our separate ways after college. Once I graduated, I moved over to Seattle to work for Microsoft for 5.5 years. And then I decided I needed a little bit more sun in my life. So moved back to California, but the Bay Area, to join Netflix in 2015. And I was there for about 9 years. My time at Microsoft and Netflix were both extremely rewarding. And Netflix especially, I think that company is run tremendously. And I got a lot of great opportunities. For my final 3 years at Netflix, I worked on a pretty big and impactful project, which was the account sharing initiative. And so that was a lot of long nights for a really long time. And I think anytime that you finish a pretty big project like that, you take a step back and you want to self-reflect about what's next. And so after that project, I started to think about ChatGPT and the evolution of AI once it was released and the sort of impact it can have on a lot of different areas in this world. And so that's when I started exploring what type of solutions we could potentially build for the education sector. Once we found out a little bit more about the multi-tiered systems of support framework and the benefits that that provides students, but the difficulties that educators are having in implementing it, it seemed like a pretty great fit for where AI can help educators provide more effective student support for students. And so that kind of got the entire conversation started. Had a conversation with Andrew, called him up. I was like, hey, there's this thing. It seems like there's a problem here and a need and something that we could potentially do together. And he jumped on board. And so from there, we just started building. We're about almost a year since we started, but full time was about 9 months ago. And we've had a lot of great progress. So pretty exciting times.
Andrew, how about you? You know, Jose mentioned how you guys met or how you got started on this project, but would love to know a little bit more about you and your background.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, my background's a bit more whirlwind than Jose's actually. So as you mentioned, we met in undergrad at Harvey Mudd College. Jose was a computer science major. I was engineering. So I actually joined a satellite communication company straight out of undergrad down in San Diego, worked there for a little more than 5 years. So a lot of like electrical engineering kind of stuff, a bit different than what I'm doing now. But I'd always wanted to do more software development and computer science, and I'd always wanted to pursue like higher education. So I took a year sabbatical to do my master's in computer science. And at the same time, I actually moved to Bath, England. So my wife is English. So I figured that was a great opportunity, one, to go back to school, the other, to like move in with her, and yeah, to get my master's. I quite liked my thesis advisor and decided to stay on and do a PhD. So I finished my PhD in machine learning right before COVID. I got a job at a deep tech startup in London, moved to London, and then had a lockdown. So that was really nice to move to like such a huge city and then never be able to enjoy it for about 2 years. But yeah, was at deep tech startup called Causalens. It was focused on a niche area of machine learning called like causal inference or causality. I worked my way up to the director of research there, very much focused on like the key product R&D. So building a lot of AI solutions for like businesses. And typically that's where a lot of these things fall down. So you see a lot of nice demonstrations and stuff of AI, but then putting it in practice to make high value business decisions doesn't always happen. So how to kind of get that credibility and trustworthiness is what we focused on a lot. And then, yeah, as Jose mentioned, he gave me a call end of last year. I think it was even Thanksgiving week, and said he had this idea. And we started, yeah, brainstorming. Jose started full-time in January, but I only just came on beginning of September full-time, actually, once we started getting a lot more traction.
So let me ask both of you, how is it to go from big-time companies, amazing places to work, it sounds like? And Andrew, it does sound like you didn't get to enjoy that wonderful place you were in fully, but still, just hearing your career paths and what you've already been through, for many people would be like, hey, I've made it. I'm done. I don't need to do any more. And yet, here we are talking about something new. It sounds like there was a pain point that both of you discovered and understood. But before we go there, how do you make that jump from what seems like stable, right? Netflix and promising, to doing your own thing?
My personality style is, and something that I'm actually still working on, is I'm always thinking about what's next. So you achieve something, you think, absolutely. I think I've achieved more, significantly more than anything I ever thought I was going to do with my life. I do not come from a wealthy background. My mom's actually an immigrant from El Salvador who was running away from the civil war in the 80s there. And so we grew up with very little. And so to reach and to accomplish what I've done in my life, it's beyond what I ever thought was possible. But once I've gotten to that point, I try to make it like the thought process to be like, okay, cool, I achieved everything I wanted to do. Now I should just settle and like enjoy it, right? But I just can't. I seem to be that type of personality. I always seem to want to do more. And so I just can't settle. But it was a terrifying move. Netflix and other companies, just working as an employee in general, provides a lot of stability, and knowing where the next paycheck is going to come from is really nice. And trying to build something that basically is new in the space. There's no legit competitors that we can find so far that are doing what we're trying to do.
Knock on wood.
And trying to prove that concept out, convince people that they should pay for software that is going to improve student support. Like, all of these are brand new challenges, and I have a lot of signal that it's going to be very successful. So we're continuing to move forward with it, but you have to have like this irrational optimism.
I love that.
You have to have this belief that it's going to work, because the number of days where you kind of question it and start to create self-doubt on whether or not it's going to work, there are a lot of them. And it's, I think that mentally challenging part of it is something that I wasn't anticipating. But luckily, all of the positive signal, all of the positive feedback that we've been receiving helps us move forward and continue to push. And so we're very passionate to make this successful.
And maybe just to add, I think we're both quite motivated for the AI for good angle. So my previous job, it was very much like a B2B, so business to business sales. And it was kind of about what extra margin can we provide to the business to improve their bottom line. So like, if we do a targeted marketing campaign on this small sub cohort of customers, then they'll renew. But in this, if we're successful with New Light, we're really, what the outcome is students that are graduating or progressing to the next grade level with additional skills than they might not have if they don't use our product at all. So that's very rewarding.
I want to now shift to New Light, what it's all about. I'm going to share with our listeners a little bit of what I understand, and then we can get more into it. But before I do, I just want to acknowledge both of you for trying new things, number one, because it's a scary time for, I think, a lot of us, many of the industries that the listeners are listening to, media, entertainment, journalism, you name it, changing, and it can be scary. And yet we're hearing that, you know, maybe there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
So New Light's use of AI is truly practical and could serve as a model for other sectors. That's my understanding. And as I was thinking about this company and how it relates to our listeners here, you know, there are so many things that I think newsrooms, journalists, and others can learn, communicators, PR companies, you know. So could you walk us through, I mean, kind of backing up, tell us about New Light. Tell us what it offers. I know from my understanding, it offers some amazing tools. Andrew, you started to mention how you can look at it grade by grade, but if you could walk us through a little bit.
Yeah, can do. The company is New Light, but our main product is called IntelliTier, and it's really about personalizing student support. And what we mean by this is support in the area of like behavioral and social emotional needs of students. Social emotional would be something like a student's exhibiting anxiety when you're switching from one task to another, maybe because they're less strong in reading than they are in math. And, you know, historically, a lot of behavioral problems might be addressed with like more punitive punishment. So think of like a detention or a suspension. But what's happening when you suspend a student is you're immediately removing them from teaching time and you're not going to progress right. Their like academic progress is going to be stalled. So how do you address the needs of that student, keep them in the beneficial teaching time without negatively impacting the other students in the classroom? And there's this kind of like wider umbrella of evidence-backed framework that Jose mentioned before, multi-tiered system of supports, MTSS, that schools are looking to implement but are struggling to it inherently, kind of because a lot of the materials around it are fairly esoteric, and teachers, in no fault of their own, don't necessarily have the full time to learn all of it or be given the resources to really implement it with fidelity. So what we're doing with IntelliTier is, on one end, giving them the ability to record these different behavioral and social emotional events within our product, and then provide an AI component to help them draft an intervention plan. So this would be the personalized student support that adheres to MTSS. So really democratizing the knowledge of the framework into an easy to use interface for teacher, a counselor, administrator, anyone, you know, at the school to be able to define the plan. The other key component is on the collaboration side. We found from speaking with a lot of teachers, how it maybe works now is a teacher will record, Billy was disruptive on Monday, Billy, like, you know, talked back on Tuesday, like, on pen and paper. Then they'll collect all this evidence and try to schedule a meeting with the support team that might be scheduled 2 weeks in advance. They'll bring all this evidence to it then, and then they all at the same time have to figure out what plan to implement. But with our tool, they can add the events as soon as they come. Anyone else who has the permissions to see that student can see it, and they can collaborate on defining an intervention plan asynchronously, so you don't have to wait to try to get everyone in a room. And obviously the pen and paper is a huge issue with data collection as well. So that's, yeah, touching a lot of it.
Well, I just want to stay there before we continue, which is Jose did give me the opportunity to look at the interface of this system. And I found it seems, number one, very easy to use, very accessible to many people. And I was thinking like, wow, I wonder if HR companies in newsrooms or other companies could use the model that you've created. Right? Because it sounds like an internal way to internally monitor and help people within an organization, and in this case, schools.
It seems like the overall strategy that we're taking for the one focus area that we're looking at right now can expand into other areas and other sectors. even other products within schools. Ultimately, the question becomes like, how much do we want to invest in different areas versus trying to focus in on one and just make that one successful? And so for now, what we're trying to do is prove out this concept. So like, yeah, we built this amazing tool that allows AI to help democratize knowledge and provide personalized recommendations in ways that have never been possible before. Really, the evolution of AI into the ChatGPT world, what it's doing is it's bringing in a general knowledge model that understands a lot about a lot of different areas and allowing you to apply them in scenarios where you may not have a ton of data, historical data, to be able to personalize the experience. The secret for a lot of big tech companies is that the way that they personalize experiences for you, so the way that Netflix recommends titles for you, is by looking at the hundreds of millions of users that use Netflix to see which different titles they tend to watch and then try to find other people that watch similar titles and then make the recommendations for the things that you may not have watched yet. That's kind of the general concept for the recommendation algorithm. But in order to do that, you need a lot of users. You need a lot of data. You need to be able to centralize all of this data. That's not something that schools have done historically or HR in different companies have done historically. And so that's where bringing in a general knowledge, like these LLMs, where they can come in, look at a lot less data and still be able to make some pretty valuable recommendations for how to move things forward.
When you speak of data, are you saying that you would need the data from, let's say you're working with a school or a school district, would you need the data for all of the students at the get-go, or is that something that you input over time?
So historically, the way that it would work, the traditional model before these LLMs, is that you would need to collect data from every school and for every student and every intervention strategy that has been applied to then try to figure out whether it's had a positive result or a negative result. And then you create a machine learning model. And Andrew's the PhD here, so you can correct me if I'm wrong at any point in time. The way that you create this machine learning model is that you run all this data through these neural networks that then kind of adjust to figure out when a certain scenario or a certain set of inputs come in, what the recommended output would be or would likely be in that situation. And so in order to be able to train that model, you have to have a significant amount of data to be able to get the model to predict things accurately. The big change is that you don't necessarily need that model anymore. You can take an LLM model like ChatGPT and provide it a small amount of data for a specific student. And based off of everything else that it already knows about the MTSS framework that we also provided additional information on, and then just general psychology and like all the other information that it knows about, putting all of that together to provide personalized recommendation on a small amount of data, that's new.
That's huge.
That's exciting.
Yeah, we have like the base model, as Jose was saying, that is supplemented with the knowledge of the MTSS framework. And to be fair, like that MTSS framework is defined maybe from these larger studies. It is evidence-backed, but it's not like a national scale. I think the largest we saw for some of it was maybe across 30 schools. So they've taken the knowledge from that, written the framework for it, and now we're distilling the knowledge of the framework into a Gen AI model for like educators to just be able to interact with natural language. So that's really kind of the means to surface this information to them easily.
That's a game changer to me because, you know, I can only imagine as a startup company going to a school or school district saying, listen, if we can have all of your data, we can create an amazing product for you. I would think that would be a tough sell. But what you're saying...
It's a tough sell.
Yeah. But what you're saying is because there is so much knowledge already out there, there's the MTSS. Is that the framework?
Framework. Yeah.
Now it's almost like you've got a lot of the factors that you would need to help understand as issues arise, so they don't have to provide all of their personal information up front.
Exactly.
In the beginning or at all. Is it at all?
At all. You would just start recording events as they happen. So like one of the great demonstrations that we do is if you just start with a student with no history of behavioral problems and ask, what intervention should I do? It says, well, nothing, the student's fine. Like, why would you do something? And if you maybe ask some other like Gen AI tools that kind of hallucinate and just make things up, But yeah, it's really, you would just be recording things, events as they happen. We also have an interface to discuss maybe strategies or like support you might want to put at a school level or a class level, so that, you know, you could provide information like if a school is fully virtual, it will give you a different type of strategy as if you're, you know, in class teaching school. But that's all very like minor stuff you need to provide. It's not give us 20 years of spreadsheets or something to that effect.
Without providing any data, you can start talking with our assistants and you can have some general conversations about MTSS and how to implement it at your school and anything like that. But the more data that you put into our platform, the more background that we get about the school, the more background information that we get about the student, historical, social, emotional events, academic assessments and such, providing that, then that information to the AI automatically as a part of our platform, then allows us to really start personalizing the recommendations that are made by the assistant for that specific context.
And that reminds me of my experience on a platform like ChatGPT, where it's gotten to know me quite a bit over the months and almost a year now. And it's amazing to me when I put in a very short prompt nowadays and say, you know, I'm going to be speaking at a conference. Give me a bio real quick. And what it does, it'll take the most recent information. Let's say I did a show today on New Light in IntelliTier. And it remembers that because I've, you know, gotten help writing the script and structuring and make sure I did the research and fact check. And so it'll mention that in my newest bio. The bio will never be the same as the bio that I used last month or last year, which I think is such a game changer and a time saver for journalists, for communicators, for anyone who needs to provide information quickly, but wants it to be dynamic and reflective of the changes that you're making in life. And that's what it sounds like IntelliTier is doing. The more information that you can put in about Bobby or Susie, the more the result or the response will be, I guess, stronger or better. Is that correct?
It'll be more effective.
Yeah, more personalized, more well-informed. I just wanted to mention, yeah, one thing you're saying is like, you know, ChatGPT improves for you as you use it more. One of the like key differences for our tool versus that is like on the data privacy and protection side. So if you just use the free ChatGPT, your conversations are being used to improve the next generation of that model. And you're not really like privy to any privacy considerations. So obviously like an educator can't go and put identifying student information into that. And especially if a student has like a diagnosis like ADD or something, that's now medical information. It would be like a HIPAA violation. So we did a lot of work to make sure our platform is like FERPA and HIPAA compliant. FERPA is one of the key like student data protection regulation.
And that's what I think is appealing, this type of system, this type of program. It would be appealing to schools, school districts, and other companies as they think about ways to address huge concerns about privacy on places like ChatGPT. And just to add, you know, if a person is using ChatGPT or other AI tools, definitely the tip there is everything is being used. So definitely go into settings. And you can change the settings so that your content is not recorded and used. The other thing that I just noticed with ChatGPT 4.0, because I do pay, as many people do for it, they have a new function. And when you click on where it says Element or 4.0, if you click on it, a drop-down box occurs. And the one of the new choices is called Temporary Chat. And when you go into Temporary Chat, it's like going incognito.
Yeah, it's like incognito mode for the...
Yeah, so I just wanted to point that out for people who are considering, you know, using these tools. But again, that privacy, which is the names of people, is something you don't want to put in, especially if you've got HIPAA or FERPA or other rules to consider, which is why a tool like IntelliTier is so promising. Let's talk about numbers. Where are we in terms of the growth? How many schools are involved, districts?
We won't go too far into it, but I will say that we've made it into a few states now, which is pretty exciting. And recently we had a call with someone in Thailand. And so we weren't thinking of going international this early, but it seems like there might be some need out there as well. Something we'll just have to continue to dig into. We also released a free version of IntelliTier a few weeks ago, and that user count is growing pretty nicely. I looked at it yesterday. We're at the beginning. We're just getting started, but the interest is growing, I think, at a good pace right now.
Why do a free version?
You can build the best product in the world, but if nobody knows about it, then you built it for nothing, right? And so both Andrew and I are not marketing people. We're doing a bit of a podcast tour. So we're here to chat about this and get our name out a little bit more. But we also see the free version as a good way to market what the product can do. And the free version of IntelliTier itself actually provides a lot of value, arguably too much, maybe something we'll revisit in at a later point, but you can basically do everything. You can add in new students, you can store the historical information. It's still FERPA and HIPAA compliant. You can use the assistants to get personalized intervention strategies for those students. And so we are giving a lot of value on the free version. The one thing that you can't do is add in additional people to be able to see the same data from your school. So we create a one-to-one sort of relationship, and it basically misses out on the collaboration aspect, which we also see as one of the most valuable components of what we're building here. And so that's how we would transition or try to get people to convert into our paid version, which is to say okay, let's install IntelliTier for your entire school so that you can all work together in recording the data and coming up with strategies and keeping track of the interventions that you've applied for students.
So if I go to newlight.io, okay, so there's a website. If I go there,
yeah,
I could find this free product?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So there's a try for free link. You could click on that and then just sign in with your Google account. We automatically create the school for you and a demo student, and then you have access to all the assistance that we provide.
So people can try it out, see how the product works, and then if they really want those other features, including collaboration, which does sound really important, then they could talk to you about paying for a service.
Yeah, the only thing you need is a Google account. That's how we do the login. And we're happy to give bigger demos as well. So if people want to talk to us before trying it, can also book a demo on our website.
That's great to know. Okay, so it's newlight.io.
Yeah.
And I will provide the links in the show notes as well.
Yeah. And if you go to intelltier.io, we redirect you to the right place anyway. So either one.
Perfect.
They both work, yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about bias, because that's been a big question, a big concern. And how do you deal or handle this issue that might come up, which is as you're using tools that have been fed by a certain amount of information and maybe not representative of all, how do you guard against that? How do you address it?
This was actually my biggest concern when Jose first came to me with the idea, is that this is what we definitely need to ensure. So maybe just to give a potentially working example, you could imagine you have two students, one with a protected characteristic. So maybe, some learning difficulty or even being just a member of a minority group. If they have the exact same behavioral history, you don't want to necessarily recommend a different treatment, maybe for a learning disability, you would. So that was a bad example. But say a member of a minority group or not, you shouldn't give a different treatment for all of the same historical information. That would be what's called disparate treatment. And the only thing that's defining whether or not you get that is because of your membership to a minority group. And how that might come about, which is probably one of the bigger risks of these massive GPT models, is they're just trained on a lot of historical data. And everyone knows a lot of historical events actually have this bias in it. You can look at banks approving loans based off of incomes. They actually have a huge bias towards positive for males to females, because your income is highly predictable based off of your gender. Same thing with approving rental agreements or mortgages, again, based off of your zip code. Zip code in the US is actually heavily segregated, and you can use that as a proxy for actually race, which is really bad. So a bank or a lender or something could say, oh, I'm not looking at that person's race to make this decision, but you do look at where they live. And then when you look at the distribution of whether or not they're approved for a mortgage, you have much lower rates for a minority group versus a majority. And that's quite bad. So yeah, we're planning to address this So right now we are at a few schools, but we probably aren't at like critical mass to see these type of trajectories. So we're gonna, be able to confirm that a very simple test is like demographic parity. So regardless of like what group you're in, are you getting like a similar outcome, and it's not massively disproportionate. So it's something that we're going to have to constantly monitor for. But yeah, it is a big problem. I think anywhere where like AI or machine learning models are really deployed without investigating this.
And I have a bit of a different answer, or just like additional information that I would like to add. So being in some of these big tech companies, and arguably Microsoft and Netflix were some of the ones that cared most about making sure that we weren't being biased in any way and bringing in and having diversity in the room. So nothing negative against them. But even on some of these companies that have focused on trying to make this sort of positive impact by bringing in diversity and having different views, I can still say that there were situations where the people in the room like had very low amount of diversity or representation there. And so when you have that sort of situation, you end up missing some things, or you end up not thinking about something or reacting differently because of an implicit bias where you might have missed something. And then once you roll it out widely, like now you actually see the results a little bit more and are more impactful. So I think just even having people that are thinking about this or on top of it, that are actively always monitoring to ensure that it's not going off the rails because we're not thinking about underrepresented groups, that's a big step forward just compared to some of these companies where they just want to get the product out and aren't thinking about how it impacts other represented groups. One of the examples that I've used recently, or that I saw recently, was that we're in the middle of a political season, right? And a lot of AI generated content is being created. And you see some of the images of Trump, and they're actually like pretty accurate with how Trump looks. Maybe sometimes they make him lose weight a bit or make him more muscular than what he actually is. But, and then you see some images of Kamala Harris, and they don't look anything like her, right? And it's very simply because when the people that built these models were training the data, they didn't even think about that. Like, they just got images that they're familiar with, that they see in their day-to-day lives. They train the models with that. And it's not until later that a scenario like this pops up, that where they're like, oh, that's a big miss.
I can speak to that completely. I have been trying to create an avatar for myself. And even the one I have now, people are like, is that you? You know, it's been so hard. I mean, obviously I hired a team to help me with this latest one, but I on my own am stunned when I ask, generate an image of me.
Yeah.
And I've even provided photos, but the skin color, the hair, everything is different. You know, I'm like, wow. All right.
It's so huge. The problem with the Trump analogy that Jose was giving is there might be 10,000 photos of Donald Trump in the training data and maybe 1,000 of Kamala. So it's always a problem with any minority group. By definition, there's less than the majority. So if you just blindly take the training data, you're going to disproportionately represent the majority group. And there's like techniques of like rebalancing and things, but then it's maybe not like as a fully expressiveness because you're kind of repeating the data in the minority group without actually giving the expressiveness of it. So yeah, it's a big problem and you kind of need to monitor it. Sorry, Jose, I think you're going to add more as well.
I was going to say, and it's not just AI, it's like everything, all products that are built historically, right? When we think about even Barbie, I think there's a great documentary recently about it. Like initially it was just a white doll that was presented time and time again, to the point that kids started like associating white dolls as good and like other colored dolls as bad. And it kind of goes back to the same issue. Like, you need to have diversity in the room for the decision makers to be able to even think about these things, or even like, because it's not, I don't think any malintent on it. It's just overlooked. It's not something that they're considering. And so by having the diversity there in the first place, having the focus in making sure that you are thinking about this, and that you're trying to come up with solutions on how to make sure that it's equitable, then it's a huge step forward compared to what's been done historically.
Thank you for that. As we approach the closing of the show, I want to ask, are there other companies doing similar work in this space?
There are components of what we do that competitors do, but the full product that we're building, no. And that's really the way that we're setting ourselves up for success, is we're bringing in a lot of the big tech know-how of how to build great products, how to build great personalization, how to build great experiences, and putting that entire package together in a very easy to use way so that anybody can take advantage of the benefits. That complete package in the education sector is not something that we see very often. And one of the big reasons on why we focused in on the education sector, like that was a strategic decision. We decided to go into education first before knowing what the problem or solution would be. And once we decided on education because of the type of skill that we could bring into it, then we started looking for a problem. We found the problem and now we're building that solution and we're not seeing direct competitors. And once again, knock on wood.
Right. It's once you start talking about it.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing that's going to be hard for me for what we do is the skill level that we have within this company. And that's always going to be a big focus of bringing highly skilled individuals in each of the areas that we focus on. And so maybe it's a little early to say this, but I do welcome the challenge.
Okay. You heard it first.
Maybe to just add a little bit more. Yeah, we're definitely prioritizing the user experience of it. We feel like that's maybe an area that's missed in a lot of ed tech. And there are competitors on helping to implement MTSS, but typically they're very much for like bespoke resources and less of like an AI component. And then there's a ton of people jumping into AI for education, but it's a lot of like using AI to grade assignments or helping to define curriculum, and less on the student support side of it. So we kind of have a little bit of a niche.
Absolutely. And as an educator, I mean, that's my primary job, college professor and all, is I would welcome a tool that a larger group of people, whether it's a department or a college or university, that provided, it sounds like a system where we can all collaborate together and understand, you know, issues and our students together. So I'm excited. Which leads me to...
Thank you.
Yeah, which leads me to my last question. Looking ahead, what's next for New Light?
First and foremost, the biggest focus is on IntelliTier right now and making sure that we're providing the right value and the right experience for our users. We want to make sure that we get this right. And that kind of goes into, once again, this philosophy of building great software for education, where we feel like historically hasn't really been done very much. So we want to do it really well. Once we're comfortable that we're providing great value with IntelliTier, then we might start looking into the next product in education or a different sector. We'll have to talk, like have conversations about that sort of moving forward.
And you heard it first. It's going to be the media.
Yeah. But there's a difference for why there's a product named IntelliTier and a company named New Light, as opposed to a product like named Slack and then a company named Slack, right?
Or kind of like Alphabet.
Yeah, Alphabet now differentiated themselves so that they have the Google product, they have Gemini, they have...
Right, and Meta.
Yeah.
It was so strange passing by the Facebook sign down in Silicon Valley where, you know, used to say Facebook and people would stop and take pictures. Yeah. And now it says Meta. It's not as exciting, but I get it. You have to have a bigger umbrella company because you might be providing services and products that help more than one sector.
Yeah. Now there are branding challenges that come with it, but I think we're on the right track.
Yeah, we need both websites, as you said, so both of them redirect. But yeah, ideally, at some point, there's a multiple products under the New Light name, and then IntelliTier is the first one.
Well, that sounds very exciting. So thank you, Jose and Andrew, for sharing valuable insights on New Light and IntelliTier and inspiring all of us to be thinking about what's possible and what's good or what's bad, all of those things as we think about AI. Just some takeaways from today. Using AI to enhance, not replace human insight in data management and personalization is something that I'm definitely taking away from this show, number one. And number two, ethics first is another takeaway. Prioritizing privacy and ethical considerations and really exploring bias and understanding you've got to do so much more because the information comes from the majority and not the minority. And number three, creativity. AI can help us refocus on meaningful, high-stakes work. Are there any other takeaways you'd like listeners to think about as we leave the show?
Yeah, I would say like, don't be scared of AI. I think change is always scary, but the way that I see it, it makes me really hopeful because And I think a lot of people are seeing it already. AI is allowing us to be more efficient. Now, efficiency has both good and bad because there's a worry of like job loss, right? But with increased efficiency, it frees you up a little bit more for creativity. And so I think even now, like technology historically has progressed so much and there's always been fear of losing jobs. Like we used to have typists, right? And we don't have those anymore. But if you look at the unemployment rate today, it's really low. So people just end up finding new areas and new things to explore, new businesses to create. And I think that that's what AI is really going to do, is it's going to maybe free us up from some areas that we're used to today. So I'm not going to deny that there might be job loss. But ultimately, I believe that we're a really creative species. And so we'll just end up finding out additional things that will allow us to kind of push everything forward. And so for me, it's the exciting time, especially for people that are super creative.
Well, on that note, thanks again, Jose and Andrew, and thanks for tuning in to AI in Journalism. If you enjoyed today's show, please leave a review on any of those platforms out there, Apple, Spotify, you name it. And please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn or on my website at yumiwilson.me. Until then, stay curious, stay ethical, and enjoy your day. Thank you for tuning in to AI in Journalism. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and leave a review to help me connect with more journalists, communicators, and educators like you. If you're interested in personalized coaching, a LinkedIn profile makeover, or a resume revamp, visit my website at yumiwilson.me. I'm here to help you advance your career. And if you'd like to support the show, please consider becoming a member on Patreon. Your support helps sustain this program. I'm also open to collaborating with other media professionals and educators exploring AI. So please feel free to reach out. Until next time, stay curious and stay informed.